One of the issues the president will address tonight in his State of the Union address is his economic plan. He has said that his opponents who criticize the plan for benefiting the rich are waging class warfare. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg says it's a charge that touches a delicate spot in the American social psyche. He has these thoughts about the way we talk about class.
The phrase class warfare is on a roll right now. It's appeared in the press more often since the beginning of January than it did in the whole second half of 2002, and it's on track to blow right by its previous two peaks. Those were in the summer of 2000 when Republicans were accusing Gore of waging class warfare in his presidential campaign, and back in 1995 when they were making the same charge about the Democratic opponents of Newt Gingrich's Contract with America. If conservatives keep coming back to the phrase, it's because it's an effective charge. A few liberals are willing to throw the phrase back at Bush. As New York Congressman Charles Rangel put it, if this is class warfare, who started it? But to most Americans, class warfare echoes too much of cloth caps and barricades. It's a foreign-sounding phrase, like something out of Les Mis, not Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. What makes class warfare so alien? According to conservatives, it's because Americans reject the politics of envy, another favorite phrase. As David Brooks put it in a New York Times op-ed piece a few weeks ago, in America, people vote their aspirations. We've always had a sense that the great opportunities lie just over the horizon. None of us is really poor. We're just pre-rich. Well, that's one theory, that working Americans will welcome the Bush tax proposals in hopeful anticipation of the day when they'll be living off their own stock dividends. But I suspect that the discomfort that Americans have with the notion of class warfare owes a lot to the way we use the word class itself, or more important, to the way we don't use it. It's striking that the conservatives who decry the politics of class warfare never go on to finish the thought. You never hear them talk about the virtues of class cooperation. In fact, the phrases class warfare and class envy are pretty much the only places where the word class occurs at all in the American conservative lexicon. I mean, when it's not preceded by middle. If you do a search on the speeches and statements at the WhiteHouse.gov website, you'll find 50 hits for middle class, but none at all for working class. Needless to say, the phrase upper class doesn't appear at the WhiteHouse.gov website either. In fact, that phrase has pretty much disappeared from American political discourse. People may still talk about upper class neighborhoods or the upper class character in a movie, but you very rarely see a phrase like upper-class voters or upper-class taxpayers. The connection between the notion of upper class and income and power was already getting cloudy when Jay Gatsby moved to West Egg, and by now it's almost too vague to define. You could see that in the exit polls conducted by the Voter News Service after the 2000 presidential elections. Not surprisingly, the 29% of voters who described themselves as upper-middle class went for Bush over Gore by about a 5-4 margin. But the 4% of voters who described themselves as upper class actually voted 3-2 for Gore. Just who were those voters anyway? They weren't just the 4% at the top of the income scale. The same exit polls show that voters with incomes over $100,000 went decisively for Bush. Actually, those self-styled upper class voters were probably no different at all in income or social status from the ones who described themselves as upper middle class. They were simply the ones who were willing to say that an income of $100,000 a year put them in a privileged group. And that's something that Democrats are more likely to own up to than Republicans are. Conservatives like to say that class is an illusion in American life. As David Brooks puts it, Americans do not see society as a layer cake with the rich on top, the middle class beneath them, and the working class and underclass at the bottom. But it's significant that Brooks started that list with the rich rather than the upper class. Americans actually have no qualms at all about acknowledging a distinction between the middle class and a working class. If not, where would that leave Roseanne or Bruce Springsteen? And we recognize the existence of an underclass, too, even if we usually describe it in racial or ethnic terms. But as those exit polls showed, most Americans don't see the wealthy as a separate class. Say upper class to most people, and what comes to mind is Thurston Howell III, not Jack Welch. In fact, my guess is that if you asked him, Welch would be quick to describe himself as upper middle class, pointing out that he still prefers beer to wine. That's what's tricky about the phrase class warfare. Middle-income Americans may be painfully aware of the gulf that separates them from the wealthy, but they don't think of those differences in terms of class lines. To a high school principal making $80,000 a year, the only class difference is between herself and the school janitor, not between herself and a dividend-clipping investor. Class is a word that sets Americans to looking over their shoulders. I think of what my friend Bob said many years ago as we were nervously chaining up our bicycles outside a restaurant on Broadway in New York. It's when you buy a 10-speed that the class war comes home to you.
Jeff Nunberg is currently a fellow at the Stanford Humanities Center. He's the author of the book, The Way We Talk Now. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shirok directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.